Hello there and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It is Monday the 24th of January. I'm Maddie Clell and this week I'm joined by our ace senior reporter Chris Cook. We're going to take a canter through what was a really magical weekend of action. Of course, the main talking point is the SBK Clarence House Chase won by Shishkin, who defeated Energamine in a real thrilling battle. We're going to go through the rest of the action at Ascot, talk about John Bond's supreme claims after he won at Haydock. Royal Pagai also took a step closer to the Gold Cup, winning his second Peter Marsh. And we're also going to discuss Alaho's claims for the Ryanair after he won at Thurles on Sunday. And if you didn't think we'd already got enough Cheltenham clues, it's Trials Day on Saturday, as well as the Skybet Chase at Doncaster. So stay tuned. But Chris, naturally, the first port of call has to be Ascot and it has to be that Clarence House. Some people seem to be looking on this race with a bit of recency bias. People seem to be getting quite grumpy saying, oh, this it wasn't that good a race that people are dubbing it as. Where does it rank among the great races that you've seen?
It was a hugely enjoyable race. And I think it was as good a race of its kind as you could reasonably hope for. I mean, you know, just getting two unbeaten talents, one from either side of the Irish Sea, into the same race away from the major festivals. This is a kind of a surprise and it feels like an achievement of sorts. You know, in the end, it's proved a sort of perfect setup for other clashes that these horses are going to have and for reasons that we'll discuss. I don't think you can just say that Saturday's result is going to be repeated again and again. I think it will be in the balance when they meet again. So that's all good news. And I think, you know, we were sort of overtaken, weren't we, in the build up to this by this feeling of cynicism that, you know, all these big time trainers, you know, they're always dancing around each other. It's all they're playing a big game of chicken. You know, if one of them says, I'm definitely going to run, then the other people back off and look for a different race. So it's nice to have it proved that that isn't always the case and that, you know, sometimes people who are behind these big name horses are prepared to take each other on. So I think it was extremely memorable, sort of nourishing, satisfying. I mean, obviously not so much if you were desperate for Energamine to win. But I think he still sort of run well enough to justify your faith and to justify your hopes of a different result in the future. I think in my own personal top 10 list, there would be other races ahead of that one. You know, we probably start with the 73 Grand National, which for me is you know, for sort of sheer drama, but also achievement and pathos and all sorts of reasons. You know, I don't think that's ever going to be beaten in my own personal list. For all that, I was like a month old at the time and it's not like I saw it live or anything. And there would be other races that sort of that meant something to me personally. What is essentially a two horse race with respect to the others that took part is probably not going to sort of end up being your most favorite race of all time. But I think it was a terrific contest. And, you know, it's one of those where you can hope that if there's an audience out there that were relatively new to horse racing, it's the kind of thing that might bind them to the game.
Yeah, Kim Bailey certainly thought it was a better race than the one that First Flow won last year. He thought that his horse ran far above last year's level, giving it a Racing Post rating of 181. The time wasn't anything spectacular. They didn't appear to go really quick early on, and then they sort of slowly built it up. This race, did anything surprise you with the way that it panned out with the jumping Shishkin? He jumped a little bit out to his left. Did you think that it was all sewn up coming to the last for Energamine?
It wasn't, he hadn't quite put it to bed, had he, but it did really look for a surprising length of time as though Shishkin was in trouble. I did find that slightly surprising. Maybe that was wrong of me, that he wasn't just able to kind of cruise up into the argument. And then it's a case of, you know, who rallies best. I guess that's what I was expecting to see. But, you know, on the run to the second last, you're thinking, is he actually going to be able to get close to this leader, to land a blow of his own? I was also a bit surprised that First Flow wasn't more aggressive. But, I mean, maybe in the context of that much better race, as you said, he, you know, He was as aggressive as he was able to be. It's just, you remember what a surprising move it was he made down the back in that, when he won that race last year, to not just take on Politolog, but to go past him. And it worked out so well. And I was expecting something similar, given that Energamine did not set a scorching pace. At first flow, having won over further, I thought maybe they would sort of try and press on and turn it into a stamina test. I'm not saying that it would have worked out any better for First Flow. I think in the end he's run as well as he was entitled to. But I, just in terms of the way the race was run, I was expecting it to be a stronger, more relentless gallop. I think Paul Townend is probably, to that extent, he's maximised Energamine's chance, hasn't he, in that race. But the champion chase is different again. It's a shorter race by... I think formally the difference in distance is 168 yards. Actually, it was railed out, wasn't it, on Saturday? Somebody was pointing out in the post today. It probably added another 40 yards. So if the champion chase in March pans out exactly as Saturday's race did, then, you know, the question is, can Shishkin get to the front in time? You know, we know that the old course...
On possibly better ground as well.
Yeah, it might easily be. And do you know what comes back to my mind is that supreme novice hurdle that he won a couple of years ago, when Abacadabras got to the front first. There was a real moment of doubt whether Shishkin was going to get to him or not. And there's still some people out there who reckon that if Abacadabras had sort of pressed on a little bit earlier, he'd have been able to prevail. I definitely think that there's a case to be made for Energamine being the value. If you absolutely had to have a bet in that market right at this moment, I think people have probably overreacted making Shishkin a 6-4 on shot.
Yeah, I was just looking there and I thought 3-1 was perhaps a little bit generous. About a horse who did everything he had to do on Saturday, and who's going to have slightly different circumstances once again at Cheltenham, although we know that Shishkin clearly acts very well around that particular course. So you're more in the leaning towards the Energamine camp for the rematch, are you?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't be feeling so certain about Shishkin, because, you know, you only have to rewind 300 yards from the finish on Saturday to get to a point where Shishkin backers are going, oh, lummy, is this actually going to be okay?
As well, interestingly, the Willie Mullins team beforehand, they seemed quite quiet. They didn't seem sort of confident. So I wonder if they think there's some improvement there.
I suppose that's possible. I would be surprised. I mean, you know, he's had a run or two, hasn't he? And the yard have been going so strongly. I'd be surprised if there was much natural improvement left in either of them. Willie did say, didn't he? I suppose that Shishkin made a couple of mistakes, and so if he manages to, you know, avoid doing that at Cheltenham, then, you know, that's another couple of lengths at least that you put in his column. I kind of was left with the impression that Willie was being gracious, obviously, as he always is.
Yeah.
In defeat, but then, you know, also he might have been hamming it up just a little bit and saying, "Oh well, we're up against it now, trying to beat this horse." I would think in the privacy of his base in County Carlow, he'll have a fair idea about how it might be managed, and he'll be feeling a bit more aggressive about it than he says in public. It's in the balance, and that's the thrilling thing. I mean, I'm not going to have a bet on this race as things are just now, but I wouldn't be looking past either of those two. And if you make me choose one, 3-1 in Ergamine, as you say, is that's got to be the value, right? Except that, you know, obviously he hasn't been to Cheltenham, and you know, you've only got to think about Chacun Persuas to know that, you know, horses that look impressive elsewhere don't always perform to the same level at Cheltenham.
Yeah, they have. And it'll be interesting to see how Chacun Persuas factors into the picture. He's a 12-1 chance, along with Nube Negra, whose trainer Dan Skelton I spoke to last week. He was still relishing to have another go at them. But obviously, I've been in racing for a shorter time than you have, Chris. But I definitely think that was one of the better races I've seen, given that the two horses, I think, produced their best on the day, which when we have these big matchups, I don't think I've often seen that. Or been confident that I've seen that in the same way that I was on Saturday. So I think we're going to enjoy that success before we look ahead to further rematches.
I mean, there was Altior versus Surname, and you obviously would remember that. It was only 3 years ago. But I mean, yes, you came away from that thinking that Altior hasn't run to his best. And there was also that lingering sense, wasn't there, that it left such a mark on those two horses.
Yeah, but, do you think that something similar could happen with this race?
Well, it was a different race, wasn't it? I mean, it wasn't such a testing surface as they happened to meet with on that particular day. And then it was, you know, again, it didn't turn into the same kind of test of stamina. So, no, I'd be very surprised. I didn't. You didn't have that feeling, did you, that those horses were just plain exhausted afterwards, which was that was very much the feeling with Surname and Altior.
OK,
so hopefully
moving on to the rest of Ascot, Chris, because we've got plenty to cover. Sure. How much do you think Unexpected Party has got in hand from the handicapper?
Well, I mean, we're going to have to find out how the handicapper reacts. I suspect the answer may be not very kindly, because he's in the end, the margin is only 4.5 lengths. But I thought that second horse, once he was passed, was sort of ridden kind of sympathetically on his first run for a while. So he's going to be chucked up the way he's in the Unexpected Party before he gets to a race like the Coral Cup or whatever handicap he ends up contesting in the spring. If you were absolutely desperate for him to win that race, I think you would rather that Saturday's race hadn't worked out to be quite such an emphatic victory. I mean, he was already on 130. There was a horse in the Coral Cup last year that ran off 130. So he didn't necessarily have to go up much at all, but he will. And bearing in mind that I don't think the Brits won any hurdle races, did they, at the last festival? I would suspect there will be something to beat him somewhere in the weights, which has just got a bit more in hand than he will by then. That's the way I'd be looking anyway.
Yeah, just the ultimate and the grand annual for British trained horses. Unexpected Party is trained by Dan Skelton. He had a good day at Ascot on Saturday. Dr. Parnassus made a really nice hurdling debut in the juvenile hurdle, and Molly Ollie's Wishes won the Grade 2 as well. Which were you more taken by?
Dr. Parnassus is, Molly Ollie's Wishes is familiar and popular and justly so. It's great to see her. You get a win, you know, she's always so game, but he feels like we know what she is, doesn't it, at this stage, whereas, you know, Dr. Parnassus, that was first run over hurdles and, you know, wasn't all that taking on the flat, but looks like he's going to be much better at this game. And you know, he's one of those horses where you can dream, can't you, if you happen to own him. You wouldn't know where his top is. He's a half brother to Métier, who was a Grade 1 winner as a novice hurdler, so pretty exciting, Dr. Parnassus, I'd say.
Yeah, and he won Métier at Lingfield's Winter Million meeting, which we'll give mention to later on. Paul Nicholls, he reached 100 winners for the season with Cat Tiger's dramatic victory at Ascot, and also then had Yala Enki, what a superstar that horse is, win his third Portman Cup at Taunton. It's all going well for the Ditcheap team. Any reflections on those performances?
Well, I mean, not all going well, unfortunately, because very sadly they lost Master Tommy Tucker at Lingfield on Sunday. It's great they've got to 100. If Paul was desperately hoping to get to 100 as soon as possible, then I guess that Cat Tiger finish has given him kittens. But I mean, that seems to be the way it is with that horse and that jockey. You know, it's there's always drama at the end, and they managed it by about a nose. He looked like he was the best horse in the race, but he's got a habit of, over-promising and under-delivering, hasn't he? So anyway, he's got his day in the sun. And Yala Enki down at Taunton, I mean, just what a fantastic horse he's been, you know, for this yard and for other yards. And it's interesting, I mean, in a way, one of the reasons that the move to Paul's yard has worked out so well for him is because Taunton really turns out to suit him. I don't think he'd raced there before. He moved to Ditchit, and now it's down the road, and so he's won 3 Portman Cups in a row, still running to that really high level at the age of 12. I just stumbled across the fact that he was top weight for the Scottish National at the 5-day stage, I think 5 years ago, and he didn't run in the end. He hasn't run it here, but they're going for the Scottish National again. It's just funny to think that, you know, he's been at that sort of level for all that time. And it'll be fun to see him spinning round there. I guess he'll be on the front end, and whether he can last right to the line under a big weight, you know, with probably a few unexposed younger horses chasing him down at some stage, You wouldn't know, but it feels like it's the right big race for them to have a tilt at in the spring.
Yeah, I think he won the Lanzarote hurdle 6 years ago. Remarkable horse.
I mean, it's so great that he's been able to sustain his enthusiasm for the game all that time, you know, and having had some tough races along the way.
Yeah, indeed. And like you say, it was remiss of me not to talk about Master Tommy Tucker. We were going to get to Lingfield later on. All going well, I guess, in the form camp. But that was a really heartbreaking thing to see at Lingfield yesterday, wasn't it? I mean, just a real top class horse who had sort of etched his way into the public's affections with his sort of bold front running and slightly scary way of going about things. Thoughts with Paul Nichols's team and connections and the people who own the wonderful Master Tommy Tucker, because he'll be missed from British racecourses, that's for sure. And from Jarl Enke and a horse who's still plying his trade at the grand old age of 12 to a slightly younger prospect. After this short pause, we're going to talk about John Bond.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to The Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. Our next port of call is Haydock Park, and on Saturday, John Bond remained unbeaten in winning the Rossington Main. We got to see a direct comparison between him and his stablemate Constitution Hill, as Might I was in the race. Remember, he finished second to the other Nicky Henderson Charge at Sandown. Where are you standing on this red-hot division now, Chris? Because you're going to need to be a very good horse to win this year's Supreme.
Yes, you are. And I mean, Nicky Henderson's in a very fortunate position having both of those horses, as we've discussed before. This was good from John Bond. I was a bit surprised, quite taken with him, you know, given how fizzy he can be and his reputation. You know, soft ground at Haydock in January is not ideal for that kind of horse that doesn't look after himself so well through the early stages of a race and is probably over racing, using up a bit too much petrol. You know, he battled gamely when he had to, and I think there was a moment at the top of the straight, wasn't there, when some of the horse jumped right across him after he'd just thrown in quite an impressive leap at the third last, and that didn't seem to faze him at all. So, you know, he has battling qualities, and you know, he's evidently able to save enough for the end of a 2 mile race anyway, even on that kind of ground. Maybe it wasn't the deep mud that you associate with Haydock in January, but it was still a test, more of a test than he's going to be meeting ground wise at Cheltenham in March anyway. So yeah, it's very interesting.
Do you think pushing him out to 4-1 was the right move? Would that interest you as a punter?
I'm not backing it, but if I was laying, I don't think I'd respond to that by saying he's a less likely winner than he was before. I'd say, if anything, he's a more fully rounded talent than I had certainly anticipated and proving to be. Constitution Hill is probably the right one out of the two of those. But as I've said before on this podcast, you know, I would be looking to Ireland. There's got to be one or two horses coming from there that have better chances than it is so far reflected in the odds. I think when we spoke, Dysart Dynamo hadn't sort of chucked his hat into the ring, and obviously he's now 72 second fab. And there's going to be something else, isn't there? I would say that'll be shortening up significantly from Ireland in the next few weeks. So it's not my idea of a betting race at this stage. You know, I'd rather wait and see what does actually turn up in that race rather than the Ballymore before making a decision. But 9-4 Constitution Hill, that still looks pretty short to me.
Okay, myself and Mark Boylan were Team Dysart Dynamo when we last spoke on the podcast, and you'll no doubt be looking towards Sir Gerhard to put his claim forward at the Dublin Racing Festival. Now, what about the Champion Hurdle division? Tommy Doska, he's looking like Britain's best hope now, Chris?
I like the horse. I think it's really pleasing that Anne Hamilton's going to have a runner in the Champion Hurdle. You can still get about 33-1. Now, that does seem big, but I'm not saying take it at the same time, because I just think it's so hard to imagine him giving half a stone to Honeysuckle and getting anywhere near her, really. So it's great he'll be there. Hopefully he'll run his usual game race. And he is improving. You don't quite know where he's got to until he's matched against those absolute top horses, do you? But typically that Haydock Champion Hurdle trial would not throw up a really strong Champion Hurdle contender with it. And you tend to think he's just done what he's entitled to do. You know, he was odds on to do that. And
I'd be tempted to just turn the race into a handicap.
I can definitely see that. I mean, I like I say, I think he's earned his chance to sort of tilt at a really top race and just find out where he is. But I mean, I'm slightly resentful as we're discussing this about that half stone mare's allowance, because it's not just Honeysuckle, there's Epitont as well in the race. And I would tend to make her, you know, because of that half stone, I think she's still Britain's best chance in the Champion Hurdle. I mean, she has won the race before. Her season's going a bit better than last season did. I wouldn't really be fancying her to turn it around with Honeysuckle, as long as that one turns up in peak form on the day. But it's just not fair to ask a horse like Tommy's Oscar, who would otherwise be interesting, to be giving weight away to these horses that have proved it in the highest level. I think it's a mistake for us to persist with that. We should be identifying championship races like the Champion Hurdle, just a handful of them in the whole year, where, you know, males and females are racing off level weights, and we actually find out who's best rather than who's best at the weights.
Yeah, I'm sure plenty of people share that view, and it's one that's constantly seems to be recycled in the racing bubble. Chris, you might not be too keen on Tommy's Oscar's credentials for the Champion Hurdle. What about Royal Pagai for the Cheltenham Gold Cup? He won his second Peter Marsh chase off top weight on Saturday. This was a real brave performance, just holding on by half a length from Sam Brown, receiving a Racing Post rating of 171. Things didn't go to plan for him in the Gold Cup last year. When he finished lame, he finished sixth. Can he do better this time around?
I would be surprised. I'm not rushing to back him, that's for sure. I mean, did he ever get to the bottom of where the lameness occurred or whether it affected him during the race? I can't remember. His performance last year was kind of what I was expecting from him. He in handicaps, giving weight to inferior horses, that really works for him. You know, he's a big, tough, strong horse, and the weight seems to matter less to him than it would to another horse that was built differently. But he's, you know, he was beaten 22 lengths by Aplutar in November, wasn't he, over the same course and distance as Saturday's race. And so, you know, magnificent though he is, I just don't think he's in the very highest class of staying chaser. At least not in a level weights race. And then, you know, in a handicap, you can really sort of show us his guts. I mean, that Sam Brown that was in second place, getting £16 on Saturday, that horse has won a grade two at Haydock. You know, he's really good around there in those conditions. And Royal Pagai's beaten him anyway. He reminds me a bit of Young Hustler, who couldn't quite make his mark in the very best races. But, you know, you stick him in a handicap and he could give weight away to the others. Who's built along very different lines to Royal Pagai. But for both of them, that just seems to work. There's lots of races. He's only an eight-year-old. There's lots of races in his future that he can win. I'd be surprised if the Gold Cup is won. I think they mentioned, didn't they, that it's sort of conditional on him getting his ground at Cheltenham in March, which is probably unlikely. You know, it's we know what it's like that week almost every year. It seems to the weather seems to turn, and it's heavy the week before, but then it dries out. By the time you get to the Friday of Cheltenham week, it's the driest it's been, and it's actually good ground. I wouldn't be rushing to support him, no.
Well, if you disagree with Chris, then you can get 20-1 about Royal Pagai for the Gold Cup. Before we review some of the action from Ireland, Chris, I want to talk to you about your column this week. And I think it's very fitting, as given on these shows, we like to look forward to the big events, not necessarily always the Cheltenham Festival. But you were slightly critiquing the fact that some in racing circles seem to resent this Cheltenham-centric view. Tell us a bit more.
Yeah, so the Racing Post did get a bit of criticism from Jane Williams, the trainer, for a headline that was pointing towards Cheltenham on the report over the Lanzarote just a week ago. The point she was making was, look, it's really hard for people to win these races, and it's a valuable race in its own right. You know, you've achieved something significant, beating about 20 other horses. Headline should be about that. And fair enough, and I totally understand why people feel that way, you know, particularly people in horse racing. Guys like Ben Case and Jane Williams, they've got smaller teams, less expensive teams than the trainers they're competing with. And it's a big deal for them to win a race like that. You want that acknowledged rather than to be told, yeah, OK, but can you win at Cheltenham? It's so hard to win at Cheltenham. People want to enjoy the moment. But in terms of journalism, as I tried to explain in my column, you know, our game has just moved on so much from the days of, 15, 20 years ago, when you could just write a straight report of a race like the Lanzarote and put the headline on it, straight factual, Cobbler's Dream wins Lanzarote for Ben Case and Jack Quinlan. Nowadays, it's so easy to watch these races live if you've got any interest in the race at all. There's just very little percentage in putting together those, online reports for something that people have already seen. So you have to work as a journalist to try and add something to the story that takes the story forward, that tells people something they weren't necessarily able to see with their own eyes moments ago. And that's what we're trying to do. And that's what headlines like that is about, so that's a headline that acknowledges, yes, you saw this race, you know what happened. And we found out some more that we can tell you about where this horse is going next, say, or, some other detail about the race. It makes people like you and me, Maddie, work a bit harder than ever we used to have to. But I think that's justified. And, our audience is increasingly sophisticated. And so we have to give them what they want. But that's what it is. It's the audience leading us towards the next part of the story rather than allowing us to dwell on in the moment in the way that we would have done 15, 20 years ago. But it's not the case that we're wanting to rain on anyone's parade or cut short any celebrations or, direct all attention to the Cheltenham Festival. It's just that, you're always having to look forward to the next thing. Upsetting as that may be for some of the trainers and jockeys who've just had a major winner and want to see it celebrated.
Yeah, I really enjoyed reading that column from you, Chris. I myself have been looking into Cheltenham this morning and specifically handicaps. We're not going to know the sort of final fields for them obviously for a while yet, but the graded races are taking shape more and more as the weeks go by. It looks like Ireland are going to be very strong again. Would that concern you at all?
No, I mean, you just have to let the festival be what it's going to be. And we already knew that most of the best equine talent is based in Ireland for whatever reason. We saw a very vivid demonstration of Irish strength at the last festival, 23 wins out of 28. Although there is some ebb and flow, that kind of dominance, it just doesn't disappear overnight. We're going to have a few years where it's like that. And maybe it'll just go on being like that indefinitely. It's possible at some stage you would like to see, British jump racing rally. But there's some work to be done there. I don't think anybody's identified any convincing solution or way of improving matters. So, look, as a spectator, as a punter, I think you have to respond by keeping your eyes open for potential festival winners, mostly on the Irish side of the Irish Sea at the moment. And it's, it's easy enough for people in this country to follow Irish racing, much easier than it ever was in the past. So there's no excuses for not doing so. You know that's where most of the best horses are going to come from, come the spring festivals.
So that's where we're going to go to now. Jerry Colomb, he advertised his Albert Bartlett claims when winning at Thurles on Sunday. He's a 10-1 shot for that race now. And Alaho, again, strengthened his claims for the Ryanair at the same fixture. Alaho has got to be the stronger contender of the two, Chris. What did you make of the two performances?
So Alaho is in the same race that he used as a prep race before going to the festival last year. He's done pretty much what you would expect, maybe even slightly more impressive than he had a right to be, than he was last year at Thurles. Given what he did at the festival last year, he's going to be extremely hard to beat, I would think. You know, Willie Mullins is evidently a bit like he used to do with Album Photo. He's sort of following the same build up to the festival that worked the last time. And so there's every reason to expect we're going to see a very similar version of Alaho to the one that hosed up in the Ryanair a year ago. Now that they know those tactics work so well for him. There'll be, you know, other talents in the race. It's possible, I think, that a horse like Shan Blue might be back in time for the Ryanair. And so that always makes it interesting. But so often those festival winners repeat. And, you know, at the moment, that's very much what I'm expecting from him.
Shan Blue is going to make it, by the way, judged on my chat for, with Dan Skelton last week. He said he's going to go straight there. So that's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's exciting because, you know, we remember from the Charlie Hall, you know, what a serious talent he is, you know, how it looked like he'd taken a step forward. And now it's such an imponderable, isn't it? You know, speaking as a punter, to know what you can really expect from that horse, you know, having been absent for months. Of course, Dan Skelton has won festival races more than once, hasn't he, with horses that have been off the track for ages. There's no question that he can get the horse fit as long as he's recovered in time. But I guess he's, you know, for preparation like that, he's going to be fizzier than ever, Shan Blue, isn't he? And that may not help.
Yeah, Alaho, a 5-4 chance, Shan Blue at 12-1. Chris, we're running out of time on this podcast, but a quick word on the Winter Million at Lingfield. The inaugural fixture happened from Friday through to Sunday. What were your reactions to this new initiative?
Yeah, it produced plenty of drama, didn't it? And it obviously added something to the weekend. We ended up with terrestrial coverage of racing Friday and Sunday. We've always complained, haven't we, about how weekends in January can be slow. And now this one was just full of drama, wasn't it? 3 days in a row. But obviously field sizes would be a concern, again, as we're always saying. And the reason for that is, you know, here are some more valuable races that have just been added to the pool. So you're competing for the same number of Class A horses. I'm not sort of making any criticism of ARC or Lingfield. It's a really interesting initiative. Lots of trainers and jockeys will be glad of the chance to get some more prize money. But it's more competition for the same pool of equine talent. And so that makes it difficult. I think at some stage, sport's going to have a serious centralised conversation about how we can organise things, you know, to maximise field sizes for all of these good, valuable, interesting races.
Yeah, that's for sure. We will follow the progress with the Winter Million. I look forward to seeing how things progress in the next few years or so. Stick with us because we're going to Cheltenham after another short pause to talk about their Trials Day card on Saturday.
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster. As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
As ever in this game, we're looking forward to the next Saturday and all the big races that come with it. The highlight for many will be Trials Day at Cheltenham this weekend. The Paddy Power Cotswold Chaser Grade 2 is hopefully going to prove interesting. One of the main horses to talk about here is Ahoy Senor. He makes up one of the 8 strong entered alongside Chantry House, who was pulled up in the King George when we last saw him. I write the admirable chaser for Harriet Graham, who won the rehearsal when we last saw him, and a host of others, including Santini, who is now, of course, with Polly Gundry. Chris, interesting approach from Lucinda Russell. She's really not afraid to enter a horse in your outside of novice company, is she?
Evidently not. And I mean, I think what's key in their minds is to sort of find out how this horse can cope with Cheltenham. It was a bit disappointing for lots of people that he got beat so comprehensively in the Quarto Star at Kempton on Boxing Day. But he might well be one of those horses, you know, Native River was another, who just isn't so well suited by Kempton. You know, big galloping horse. I would have to worry that maybe Cheltenham isn't going to be ideal for him either. You know, it might be sort of those big flat ovals like Newbury that are going to be ideal for him. But anyway, if he lines up, and he's dropped up just now with Derek Fox on board, we'll get to find out, and that'll be very exciting. And who knows, if it goes fantastically well, then as I think you've already suggested, maybe they'll have to have a think about whether they do the Coneygree thing and go for the Gold Cup rather than the novice chase at the festival.
I'm a dreamer, Chris, and I'd love to see it happen if everything went to plan on Saturday. Chantry House, are you cold on him for the Gold Cup now? Do you think he can redeem himself?
Yeah, I'm certainly open to the possibility. Just run no race, has he, on Boxing Day? I think you put a line through that and think that, you know, the horse we saw winning Grade Ones at Cheltenham and Aintree last spring might easily come to the fore again. So, jury's out. I wouldn't be backing him for Saturday, but I'm open to the possibility that was just a throw-out run, as they say. Simply the Bets is interesting as well. I mean, along with Ahoy Senor, he's the only one who's already jocked up. And he's obviously joined Paul Nicholls for this season, hasn't won yet, but he was second under a big weight, wasn't he, at a handicap on New Year's Day, and now stepping up to 3 miles round Cheltenham into a graded race. It'd be interesting to see if he can take another step forward.
Well, we saw Protectorat, didn't he? He finished second in the Paddy Power after a big weight and then won the Many Clouds and has turned into Britain's shortest price horse in the Gold Cup. So it's not impossible, and if you're in Britain hoping to back a home contender for the Gold Cup, you'll be hoping something emerges at Prestbury Park on Saturday. Let's go over to Doncaster. They've got a couple of Grade Twos as well, the River Don and the Lightning Rod Novices Chase. But the big handicap is the Skybet Handicap Chase, a listed race over 3 miles. I'll read out some betting for you. Fusil Raffles at 5-1, Cap Course 11-2, Captain Nord 13-2, Commodore, who was so impressive when we last saw him at Cheltenham, 7-1. And Sam, the Ascot winner, 15-2, and it's 9-1 bar. Any names jump out at you on first viewing, Chris?
Sort of a disappointing number of names, really. I thought Caribbean Boy was quite interesting. Commodore, the bookies can't seem to make up their minds. There's quite a bit of 5-1. I'm seeing one.
Sorry, nine. Chris, I'm just going to interrupt you. I don't think Caribbean Boy's there, is he?
Yeah, he is. He might not be in the betting, but he's in the entries. Or was he in the long term and they've just taken him out, haven't they? Sorry.
It's okay. I'll give you a minute if you want, and then we can just jump back in.
No, I've got plenty of horses. Let me be sure.
I write in both. Midnight Shadow, Cloudy Glen.
It's as well you're here, Maddie. I'm sorry about that.
No, yes,
if you want to sort of... did you tee me up there?
I put Who Takes Your Eye on first glance.
Okay. Commodore is a very interesting one for Venetia Williams, the 10-year-old grey. The bookies can't seem to make up their minds about him. He's 5-1 with quite a few of them, but 9-1 in at least one place. And he won the Cheltenham Handicap by a wide margin in December. That's the only time we've seen him since February. I thought a £9 rise for that wasn't necessarily as swinging as you might have thought, given that he's won a sort of decent valuable race by 15 lengths. So there's every chance that he can run another big race. I think 9-1 looks on the generous side. I write up at the top. It'd be great to see him run well again, but he can't have any secrets from the handicapper, can he, at this stage?
Yeah, I wonder if Connections will opt to run him in the Cotswold Chase instead. What would you do?
I think that's very much the way that I would be leaning. It's there's always going to be something, isn't there, in a big field handicap like the Great Yorkshire / the Skybet, as I should learn to call it. There's going to be something, isn't there? He's having to give a stone and a half to that's just a bit fresher in the closing stages. Cap Course is another interesting one. I see that Paul Nicholls has still got him in the Sky Bet on a mark of 139. Obviously, he was last seen winning the Sir Peter O'Sullivan Memorial at Newbury in November, and he won it quite handsomely. He has been rated higher in the past than he was that day, and now he's sort of back up again to 139. I'd be surprised if that was the enough to completely anchor him, but you know, he's obviously not been the most robust horse physically over the years. If Paul's had a clear run with him since November, then I'm sure he'll be ready to run well again.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he had a couple of pounds in hand from the handicapper, but whether that will be enough and whether he'll be straight enough to get things all his own way on Saturday remains to be seen. Chris, before we go, give us a nap for this week.
Ebi Gum was the one I was looking at going back to flat racing now. Obviously been around for ages with Tim Easterby, just joined Kevin Ryan. And I thought he ran quite a nice first race for the yards at Southall last week. He flattered to get within half a length of the Easedown winner. He's 7 years old. He's going to be a bit sharper for that. He should be interesting. Haven't seen prices yet, but he is entered for Newcastle on Thursday in the 7 o'clock race. It's an apprentice handicap, and Oisin McSweeney has already been jocked up, so look out for Ebagum.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Chris, and thank you everyone for listening. We'll see you again next week. Make sure to rate, review and subscribe in the meantime, and tune in for Friday's show with Bruce and the team as they give you all their best bets for the weekend. We'll see you soon.